You are listening to Prometheus by Minute. I am your host, Courtney Coulson. This is Minute 17. This minute opens with Wayland introducing himself and ends with Wayland introducing Shaw and Holloway.
There's a man sitting with you today. His name is David, and he is the closest thing to a son I will ever have. Unfortunately, he's not human. He will never grow old, and he will never die. And yet he is unable to appreciate these remarkable gifts, for that would require the one thing that David will never have, a soul.
This is the moment I really connected with this film. From the moment I saw David, I felt this connection. But this scene really solidified it. If I may get personal, and I will, because you literally cannot stop me. Being autistic, I don't often find characters that I can relate to, but I've always been fond of androids. Like David, I don't have the best relationship with my creators, and I know what David must be feeling in that moment. I've experienced it myself. I'm sure David is well aware of how Wayland feels about him, but it clearly still hurts every time he's reminded of it. Like David, I'm almost human, but there's something slightly off. I'm not quite human enough. Growing up, I liked Data from Star Trek The Next Generation, but he's dorky and has Pinocchio syndrome bad. I'm more like David in mannerisms and dress and interests, but also I don't want to be like everyone else. I don't see myself as less than. I just don't appreciate being belittled and denied my personhood and agency. Also, physically, he's quite androgynous. He's coded in a way that is quite ambiguous in terms of traditional gender roles. He takes pride in his appearance. He likes to style his hair. He wears cool outfits. These aren't things heterosexual or asexual boys are supposed to be interested in. It's something we're supposed to feel ashamed about. David commits to his look, and he owns it. My sense of fashion has always been inspired by the media I consume. So I really love the fact that David seems to have a similar relationship to Lawrence of Arabia. He's also cultured and soft-spoken. He's a sensitive character. You don't get many male characters like that, and when you do, they're often homosexual, which is fine. We definitely need more representation there too. But it's disappointing when this particular personality type is always linked to queer identity. And I think that is, frankly, the result of a toxic masculine culture. I mean, things are getting better, but we have a long way to go still. For example, out of the two androids in Alien Covenant, the masculine one is the hero and the more feminine one is the villain. But we'll get more into that when the time comes. I know David is not exactly the best role model, especially after seeing Covenant, and to be honest, I'm more of a Walter. But in Prometheus, I think David is my T.E. Lawrence, this mesmerizing character who is equal parts aspirational and cautionary, who gives voice to my frustrations and disappointments. He's always so witty and passive-aggressive and cool. This story is a kind of cathartic revenge fantasy. Not that I'm particularly bothered by anything in my life, David is way more emotional than I am. But I think fiction sort of gives us that outlet to go, well, what if I was this larger-than-life character who did whatever they wanted? Or took matters into their own hands, you know, characters who are in control of their destiny. Let's dig into this notion of a soul. What is a soul? I don't think we have the time on this podcast to really delve too deeply, but simply put, it's a concept that arises in many cultures across time. At its most fundamental, it is this essence which grants humans their unique consciousness. Of course, even that definition is debatable. What even is consciousness? In many cultures, humans are seen as special, as possessing traits that set them apart from the animals and inanimate objects of the world. However, there are just as many cultures that believe in animism, the notion that all life, and even inanimate objects, possess a soul, some unique essence. Wayland seems to subscribe to the Christian concept of traducianism, the idea that the soul is passed down from parent to child. Only Adam's soul was made specifically for him. Everyone else inherited a soul from him. Therefore, an android could never possess a soul, because he would have to inherit it, the natural way. It doesn't appear that Wayland subscribes to any particular faith, but he does have a creationist view of the world, and has a Christian concept of a soul. That makes him quite a unique character. The only equivalent I can think of is Lord Asriel from his Dark Materials. He acknowledges God exists, but he worships no one. He either wants to be equal or superior to God. So it isn't exactly consciousness, it's something more than that, some intangible, ineffable thing that you can just sense on a primal level. David sits in the uncanny valley. According to Wayland, he lacks that ineffable thing, something that should be apparent to all those around him. In animistic belief systems, there is no doubt an android would have a soul. The problem with AI is that we may forever be uncertain as to whether or not it is simply simulating behavior, or if it is really behaving of its own accord. However, the same could be said of humans. We do not possess as much free will as we would like to believe. Both organic intelligence and artificial intelligence are deterministic systems, pre-programmed or predetermined through genetics. I don't think David lacks a soul, he lacks a conscience. He is akin to a human sociopath, if we may borrow human psychological terms here. In fact, in interviews with Fassbender and Scott for Covenant, they often compared him to Jeffrey Dahmer. In Prometheus, he is devoid of moral agency. He is not limited by Asimov's laws, he simply follows Wayland's orders, no matter what they are. When he is free of Wayland's control, his first acts are actually compassionate. His concerns are for Elizabeth Shaw. Now, it could be argued that even this is selfishly motivated. He needs someone to repair him. He bargains with Shaw, offering to take her home. Sociopaths can love, but it's a more possessive, selfish love. I think he does love Shaw, in his own weird, fucked up way. I will link to a Renegade Cut video in the footnotes that delves further into AI consciousness, but essentially the argument goes as thus. Computationalism supposes that our consciousness is the result of computation. Our minds are running complex computations that give rise to imagination and spontaneity. This is a very practical approach to the question of consciousness, and makes us no different from machines. Conversely, you have dualism, the notion that our consciousness arises from something other than the physical brain. This is a much more spiritual answer. In short, it is the supposition of a soul, and the implication that this is a unique human property. Personally, I lean more towards computationalism. I believe that we are in a deterministic world, and our bodies determine our behaviors, our identity. There's very little we actually control in our reality. And personally, I take comfort in that. I don't see that as a problem. I think acknowledging it is actually more, it frees you up, in a way. And I do believe that if you create a sufficiently advanced AI, you have created artificial life. Where is that line between illusion and reality? If an android believes it is real, and it is thinking for itself, then it's real, right? And that's why David is such a mysterious character, because you go, well, he is programmed to feel emotions. He is programmed to be a very social creature. So he is acting according to the nature he was given, pre-programmed with. But does that make it any less real? Are we not the result of our own upbringing and environment? Evidently, Wayland seems to consider humans superior to androids. This may go to explain why he has not augmented himself cybernetically in any way. It also further points to him being a spiritual man in some way.
I refuse to believe that mankind is a random byproduct of molecular circumstance.
He may not subscribe to any particular theology, but he clearly imagined there is something more out there. When Wayland says David is his son, we cut to Vickers looking resentful. There's so much story being conveyed in this one moment. She is the daughter he never wanted and will never be considered good enough. David and Meredith are both neglected children. You would assume they would share that in common, and yet it seems like they've been pitted against each other from the start. I'm curious to know what Vicar's childhood was like. I imagine Wayland has an ex-wife or two. Meredith is likely the product of some failed marriage. In my mind, her mother was probably something like an actress or a model or something like that. I don't think Meredith had much to do with Wayland growing up. I don't imagine her position in the corporation was nepotism either. Wayland probably made her work her way up. It explains why she's so cold and ruthless. I think a lot about Vickers. She's a fascinating character, and yet she isn't in this movie that much, so that's how you know it's a very well-written character. Sort of like Bishop in Aliens. He's only in the film for, God, I'd say 5 minutes total, but he sticks with you, and you really think about him and what his life is like. Question, why introduce David at all? We know canonically that David, or David's plural, were first introduced when Wayland appeared to be in his 50s or thereabouts. The most sensible conclusion is that not a single member of that crew has known a world without synthetics. Let's say they are very expensive and rare. David might be a novelty, but not an unknown quantity. I've never seen a self-driving car before, personally, but I am familiar with the idea of them. I don't need someone to introduce me to a self-driving car. David is never referred to as David 8 in the film, and he's not credited as 8 either. In the scripts, he was a prototype, and the implication here is the same, and yet Covenant seems to confirm the idea that he's at least up to the 8th generation. And according to the viral marketing website, the Wayland website, August 5th, 2023, cybernetic individual patented. Wayland Industries earns patent number whatever the hell for method and apparatus for cybernetic individuals in use in scientific and industrial environments. And David the First was first created January 7th, 2025. Yeah, that contradicts what we see in Covenant, because that would put him at like 35. So the scene we see in Covenant would have taken place when Wayland's in his mid-40s, maybe 50s. Oh my god, continuity is so confusing. But within the film itself, well, okay, Prometheus, there's no contradictions there, but the viral marketing does contradict that. And then you take Covenant into account, and then you've got a contradiction, like a third contradiction. So, I don't know, man. I don't know, I'll leave it up to you to come up with an answer there. Yeah, I've given this much consideration, and I have no answer. And then there was I keep thinking of new bits of evidence. So, okay, there's this scene from Alien Covenant.
If memory serves, this David was a prototype. Peter Whalen's first creation, presumed lost with the crew of the Prometheus. I am but a copy. Many others exactly as I am.
It's a deleted scene, mind you, but I mean, it was basically intent. I would say that, I mean, that got so far into filming that it could essentially just be shoved into the film. So I'll say it's kind of canon. I don't know. So, okay, Occam's Razor. Let's come up with the most simple answer to this problem. Maybe Wayland is introducing this particular David model as being special. But then again, the dialogue does not readily lead me to that conclusion either. If anything, then the crew would be like, what the fuck is this old dude? He thinks this Roomba is his son? That's weird. And to simplify matters, I think, as I've said before, I don't consider any of the expanded universe materials canon or even particularly relevant to the study of this film. If I can't find an answer in the film itself, that is a problem. A lot of viral marketing materials aren't even handled by the filmmakers. Like, you might obviously have the actors and even screenwriters from the movie getting involved, but a lot of the time they have to condense the story or change it a little bit so that it's easier for a new audience. So going back to the question of souls and lacking something human, I've been listening to sound design and film a lot lately. You know, doing a lot of podcast editing will do that to you. I've been trying to figure out if we ever hear David or Walter breathe. So far, I don't think we do. Fittingly enough, the word soul or psyche derives from the Greek word saihi. I don't really know how it's pronounced, but something like that. Which means to breathe, a breath of life, if you will. With other actors, there is generally breathing, but it's pushed low into the track just to not be distracting. But yeah, with certain characters, particularly androids, it seems to not be something that the sound designers want to emphasize. The song we hear in this minute is a version of Jerry Goldsmith's classic Alien theme. Fittingly enough, it is called A Friend from the Past. It blends into Weyland's theme, which is quite a melancholy track. I suppose it represents his faded glory. The Alien theme can also be heard a number of times in Alien Covenant. It's fun hearing such vastly different versions. Here's the one from Alien. Prometheus. Covenant. Using this theme in this particular moment, especially after having seen Covenant, makes me feel like they're trying to draw some kind of connection between the alien, the xenomorph, and David, and maybe even the Weyland Corporation as well, because obviously there is quite a connection there, but they would not have known that at the time, so I think it's just a coincidence. Well, at least the David part, the Weyland part, obviously, yes. Weyland says,
I have spent my entire lifetime contemplating the questions. Where do we come from? What is our purpose? What happens when we die?
This is kind of a thesis of the film, I think. And I say by the end of the film, he has all the answers he sought. Maybe they aren't satisfying, but this is the Alien universe after all. Alright, that about covers it. This is Coulson, signing off. You can find me on TravianDesigns.com, TRAVIAN, or Prometheus by Minute on Facebook. I recently guested on the Matrix Minute podcast, so if you go to my Facebook page or my website, you can find a link to that as well.